paper 10, section 5, old single column, page 113. I think, let's see, that we probably don't need any significant intro here. So I don't have to comment on it, just notice what they bring up right away. You know, we've seen this pattern of as they've been talking about existential deity, that they talk about the nature, and then they talk about the attributes. Notice how that gets modified for this exceptional element of existential deity, the Paradise Trinity.
Functions of the Trinity. The personal deities have attributes, but it is hardly consistent to speak of the Trinity as having attributes. This association of divine beings may more properly be regarded as having functions, such as justice administration, totality attitudes, coordinate action, and cosmic overcontrol. These functions are actively supreme, ultimate, and, within the limits of deity, absolute, as far as all living realities of personality value are concerned.
Okay, so that's one of the most important little clue paragraphs in the book. We've pointed to it many times already as we've begun to unpack the greater nature of deity. So right in the middle there, is the key element. There's four things: justice administration, totality attitudes, coordinate action, and cosmic overcontrol. And those four things break into 1 and 3. There's two different expressions that come from the Trinity, from the Paradise Trinity. That come in a hierarchical, downstepping fashion, as they were alluding to there in the latter part, supreme, ultimate, absolute. So just invoking the whole vertical structure. And one of those, those two functional expressions, one of those expressions comes from just that first element, the justice administration. You have a whole domain of expression coming from the Paradise Trinity that's most immediately expressed in a group of personalities, in a group of beings called the stationary sons of the Trinity. They're Trinity origin beings. They're direct offspring of the Trinity. Father, Son, Spirit, not parents. Just the Trinity, the Trinity origin beings. Beings like the Ancients of Days, for instance, all the other of days, that group. And beings like the author of this paper, Universal Censors. Stationary sons of the Trinity. They are these direct expressions of the Trinity that are embodiments of this mode of functioning, justice administration. They are the personalization of the impersonal justice that is the Trinity. The Trinity is justice. So you have these direct individuations, if you will, offspring of that justice, these direct expressions of that justice that is the Trinity, and then they get personalized as beings, and they function like a universal censor. Okay, so that's one. The other expression coming from the Trinity embraces a threefold nature. This threefold functioning of totality, attitudes, coordinate action, and cosmic overcontrol is a potential for a threefold correlation with deity in a downstepping fashion, like they pointed out. That's the mother. So you have two things coming from, primary things coming from the Trinity in terms of offspring-like, if you will, expressions. Stationary sons of the Trinity and the whole hierarchical expression of the mother. And then, how that deity, how that mother-type deity gets, joined with other things, like in a creative mother spirit, there's mother-type deity that gets joined to spirit-type deity and personalized as a creative mother spirit. But that whole phenomenon of that mother-type deity, it comes down from these three functionings. Okay, and when we talk about that expression that is mother-type deity, we speak of that mother-type deity as having three aspects to it: womb, focalization, and upholding. Okay? Or if you want to think, if you think of a person like God the Mother, womb, focalizer, and upholder. Or you could say, that expression has totality attitude. It's a coordinate actor and it's a cosmic overcontroller. Okay, because this is all synchronized together. Okay? That's the mother, womb, focalizer, upholder. Okay, and there's that coordinate. We've come to recognize that when we see the word coordinate, we know there's mother deity in play in some way. Maybe not directly, but at least indirectly, you've got mother deity in play. Okay? So, right there is, when you're talking about that coordination, that's the focalizer. Okay, and when you see over control, think upholder. All right, so that's a very key. That sort of direct expression, justice, and then there's womb, focalizer, upholder.
The functions of the Paradise Trinity are not simply the sum of the Father's apparent endowment of divinity plus those specialized attributes that are unique in the personal existence of the Son and the Spirit. The Trinity association of three Paradise deities results in the evolution, eventuation, and deitization of new meanings, values, powers, and capacities for universal revelation, action, and administration. Living associations, human families, social groups, or the Paradise Trinity are not augmented by mere arithmetical summation. The group potential is always far in excess of the simple sum of the attributes of the component individuals.
Okay, so, there he is again, after giving you, like I pointed out, what really is only directly sort of usable when you take the top-down viewpoint, you begin to see what's, really behind that whole totality, attitude, coordinate, action, cosmic over-control. So what does he immediately juxtapose to that? He says, okay, if that didn't really do anything for you, let me remind you of your gentle on-ramp to the Paradise Trinity of the bottom-up point of view. And he does that, so he gives you he uses it an opportunity to really, extensively talk about super additivity. Okay, so you've got all of that, but notice one of the things that passed by. In the previous one, we had supreme, ultimate, absolute, and here we saw evolution, eventuation, and deitization. Okay. When we think about that whole expression, downward expression of the mother, and like when we're talking about the supreme, we talk about that upward phenomenon, the Almighty, and the two coming, the super additive consequence of the relationship of that bidirectional flow of deity is the Supreme, personalized as, you know, from a top-down point of view, is God the Supreme. Okay. You know, evolution, God the Supreme. Eventuation, God the Ultimate. Deitization, God the Absolute. Okay. So, I mean, he's being quite, gentle about it, here. He's not really challenging you to try to somehow think about all of that experiential deity right here, because it is in the context of really presenting an initial presentation of existential deity. But notice patterns like that. Know what it's talking about. What it's alluding to. God the Supreme, God the Ultimate, God the Absolute. The other stuff in there is pretty straightforward. I mean, he is challenging you to, he's kind of using this opportunity to talk about, of talking about super additivity to, bring in human families, social groups, to remind you that, it's not just when you're talking about this bottom-up point of view of the Paradise Trinity as being the super additive consequences of the relationship between the three absolute persons. This is a general phenomenon of super additivity. And we certainly use it that way. It's like we didn't really need this encouragement to recognize that that's a universal phenomenon. Everything from the water molecule to the Paradise Trinity can, in part be understood as a super additive phenomenon. It's a very important element. If you search for super additive in the book, you won't find it used that many times necessarily, directly as that word, but it's always in play. I mean, that fact is always in play.
The Trinity maintains a unique attitude as the Trinity toward the entire universe of the past, present, and future. And the functions of the Trinity can best be considered in relation to the universe attitudes of the Trinity. Such attitudes are simultaneous and may be multiple concerning any isolated situation or event. 1. Attitude toward the finite. The maximum self-limitation of the Trinity is its attitude toward the finite. The Trinity is not a person, nor is the Supreme Being an exclusive personalization of the Trinity. But the Supreme is the nearest approach to a power personality focalization of the Trinity which can be comprehended by finite creatures. Hence, the Trinity in relation to the finite is sometimes spoken of as the Trinity of Supremacy.
Okay, so let's make sure we know what the immediate thing that's being presented. We've pointed out how he's been bringing in this threefold hierarchy, and now he's pointing out why you can have such a definitive threefold hierarchy coming from the Trinity, because literally the Trinity has this threefold hierarchy of functioning. Attitude towards the finite. What do you call that mode of functioning of the Paradise Trinity? The Trinity of Supremacy. Okay. Simply because, remember the word supremacy, and this is, if this wasn't part of a proper designation here, the Trinity of Supremacy, the supremacy word would already be capitalized. Okay, this is the capital S supremacy word, which literally means the functioning of deity on the supreme level. So no matter what deity you're talking about, if it's functioning on the supreme level, that functioning is called supremacy. Functioning of deity on the supreme level, supremacy, capital S. The divinity of that is lowercase s supremacy. The deity likeness, the divinity of that functioning of deity on the supreme level is lowercase s supremacy. Okay, so just that basic term. So that you can properly talk about if the Supreme is reaching down to engage the finite. It's, you know, when it does, it's functioning as the Trinity of Supremacy. Now, why not the, you know, its attitude toward the finite, why isn't it the Trinity of Finity? And why is it supremacy? Because it's top down. Okay? That attitude toward the finite, not in the finite, okay, toward the finite is from the top down. When you approach the finite from the top down, you engage, you know, the supreme level that encompasses the finite. Okay, and they're pointing out the maximum self-limitation of the Trinity. The farthest it can reach down from its, you know, existential source location is to supremacy. It doesn't literally go down into the finite. In other words, it's just like when an adjuster is coming down. The farthest the adjuster can penetrate down is to the supreme level. So either something has to bridge the gap between where you are to start with and that supreme level, like the Spirit of Truth, or you've got to work your way up through time, through a process, in relationship with the Holy Spirit. You got to work your way up to that maximum self-limitation of that adjuster. It's the farthest down it can reach. It's like, I wonder if there's any correlation. Why that both of them only go down that far? You know it is. I mean, that's, you know, that whole bit about what are we actually engaging when we begin to engage the adjuster, we're engaging its experiential nature. We're engaging its mother likeness, not its father likeness. What are we just saying about, you know, this mother deity coming down? See, you know, because of this downstepping action of the Trinity, that's bringing mother deity down. And the maximum self-limitation, the farthest that the Trinity, the functioning of the Trinity can bring that consequence that is mother deity down is there. Okay, that's that whole downreach of experiential deity. Hence the, you know, the allusion to God the Supreme, God the Ultimate, God the Absolute up there. Okay, that's you know, you see, there's a whole subtext going on here, besides just kind of the immediate upfront, definition of terms and a few things. Yeah. All right, so you can probably guess where it goes next.
2. Attitude toward the Absonite. The Paradise Trinity has regard for those levels of existence which are more than finite, but less than absolute. And this relationship is sometimes denominated the Trinity of Ultimacy. Neither the Ultimate nor the Supreme are wholly representative of the Paradise Trinity, but in a qualified sense and to their respective levels, each seems to represent the Trinity during the pre-personal eras of experiential power development.
Okay. So, again, you've got just the name for the Trinity functioning on the ultimate level is the Trinity of Ultimacy, because that's what the word capital U, Ultimacy, means, the functioning of deity on the ultimate level. Okay, so that's just simple, analog. But did you notice there's something else going on in both of those little blocks? You know, they're bringing up the Supreme and the Ultimate here in both of them. And notice how they do it. Okay, the Trinity, in that first one, going back to that, you know, item number one there, the Trinity is not a person, nor is the Supreme Being an exclusive personalization of the Trinity. But the Supreme is the nearest approach to a power personality focalization of the Trinity, which can be comprehended by finite creatures. Okay, so, we've not too long ago went through all the Supreme papers and sorted this out. What are they talking about there? What does a new reader not know as he's just gotten to paper 10 and hasn't read the Supreme Papers yet, and unpacked the Supreme Papers. You know, what are they alluding to here? Or what is he, you know, what is the universal sense alluding to here? Nor is the Supreme Being an exclusive personalization of the Trinity. Okay, so when you think about, the actualization and realization of the Supreme Being as this culmination of all this finite process, is what ends up being that fact that, you know, one day you'll be able to walk up and shake hands with the Supreme Being, is what goes into making that being just what comes from the action of the Trinity? No. There's two things we were just talking about. There's two things that go into bringing that Supreme Being into existence. Part of it is this downwelling action has a source in the Trinity, and that's the mother component. The other source is this upwelling component called the Almighty that's a consequence of the actions of the Supreme Creator personalities. You know, so, see, that's what, it's the Supreme Being isn't just a result of the action of the Trinity, it's also a result of the action of Supreme Creator personalities. That's why they're saying that. But it says, but the Supreme is the nearest approach to a power personality focalization of the Trinity. There's that focalization, there's that mother word. So again, why does it say it that way? Think about the two components. If we're talking about if we're thinking about God the Supreme, what went into making God the Supreme? As a fact that encompasses the finite, what's actually in the finite that's giving rise to that? There's this bidirectional phenomenon. There's two components to it. The power pattern part, if you talk about God the Supreme expressed in the finite as a power pattern phenomenon, that's God the Almighty. Okay. But the personal purposive expression of God the Supreme down in the finite is God the Mother. Okay? So when you're talking about, there's power there, notice the root is, it's power personality. Focalization. The Almighty is the summation. The Mother is the focalization. That's what's actually taking that summation and bringing it to a focus that can be this point being called the Supreme Being when all is said and done that you can walk up and shake hands with. That personal purposive action, that focalization, that is what the part that comes from the Trinity. Okay? So that's why they're saying that. The focalization doesn't come from the Supreme Creator personalities. That isn't what brings it all to a point. Okay? Their action just creates the summation. Okay? But the Trinity's action, expressed in the Mother, brings that summation together into a focalized body that is the body of the Supreme Being.
Yeah. The Almighty brings this power to a summation by bringing everything to a relative balance so the focalizer can begin to use it, maybe?
Initially you think of it in kind of like you're saying, kind of in quasi-static terms, where you just literally think of the Almighty as just the summation. It's this all the finite activity has this reflective consequence. That's accumulating this vast summation. Now, obviously, when you start to think about it. Farther down the road, and maybe and then with a little more sophistication, even early on. Okay, it's a facet of deity, so it's functioning. But let's not try to make the picture too complicated all at once. So just initially, just thinking of it as this summation that literally, if you coalesced it, could be the body of a being. There's one spot where they literally speak of that the Almighty is the embodiment. Okay, I mean, they use that word because they want you to think literally. It's literally what you can visualize as most directly the substance, if you will, of the body of that future being, the supreme being, is this summation. But something has to bring it all together. Something has to unify this, bring it, focalize it, okay? Get it coordinated into a true body, not just an imaginary body. It's like, well, I could imagine that you put all those marbles in a pile, Okay, now
drawing the quantity up into a quality.
Yeah, bringing quantity and quality together into a whole. Right. Okay. Yeah. So that's what they're talking about. But you see, the key is that that the supreme being think of as a power personality synthesis. Okay. But see, it doesn't just say that there. It doesn't. It brings in this focalization element, and that's a between the lines, in a sense, thing that we can recognize. We know that focalization is tied to the coordinate action up there in that first paragraph, okay? The action of the Trinity downstepped and functioning in this expression of deity that is the mother in the finite. When you think of it as an individual, that's a universal mother. That focalizer is the universal mother. That results from the Trinity. Okay, and in terms of me as a person imagining, engaging the Supreme Being, I'm engaging a person. I'm not engaging whatever the stuff is that its body's made out of. And that's why they say that. See, I mean, that's, what comes from the Trinity, is the nearest approach, say, to understanding what that person is all about, even though they said, nor is the Supreme Being an exclusive personalization of the Trinity. But still, what really brings personal purposive potential and then nature into the Supreme Being comes from the Trinity. That comes from the action of the Trinity, not from the action of the Supreme Creator personalities. Right. They're building its body.
Right.
Okay?
The Supreme Creator personalities... are the cart, the personality, the focalization is the horse, more or less.
Right. Any analogy, okay? And think about how you have a similar thing, in a similar nature in you. We've talked about that a lot when we're talking about the supreme, this two flow nature.
But what we're really talking about here is the accumulation of experiences, not stuff.
Right, right. Yeah, but we think about we use the picture of stuff just so he can start to get a sense.
Experience is a quantity.
But like I said, I mean, this summation literally is a facet of experiential deity called the Almighty. Now, it's not a pile of marbles. It's literally a facet of deity. Okay, so, but anyway, notice they do the same thing in the next block. Neither the ultimate nor the supreme are wholly representative of the Paradise Trinity. Okay? Again, just the exact same thing, restated for the Supreme, and just, there's obviously an analog with the ultimate is not just the downwelling mother component. There's an upwelling component too, which they say, well, you could begin to have some notion of that by just extrapolating the Almighty into some notion like the Omnipotent. Okay, but they say that's really crude and not really appropriate. But the whole point is there's going to be some transcendent analog of power personality synthesis going on, in the absonite. And there is, or another way of thinking about it, there's God the ultimate, and God the ultimate functioning in a personal purposive fashion in the next universe ages. Within the absonite, it's God the Mother. Yeah. It's just the same thing, just at the next higher notch up. Okay. God the Mother is not just, the thing that sits over there or something. Mother deity is a very ubiquitous phenomenon, like we were talking about last week. It goes all the way around the functioning of deity, all the way around the infinite eternal ellipse. And so it's expressed in many ways and many levels. Okay. But in a qualified sense and to their respective levels. There's a God the Mother of the finite, and there's God the Mother of the absentite, in those respective levels. Each seems to represent the Trinity. Since we've talked about it in the past, let's just remind ourselves of what the other little thing that comes into play here. This mother deity doesn't just directly manifest out of the Trinity of Supremacy or the Trinity of Ultimacy. It's an expression of a relationship. Okay? It's an expression of the relationship between, like in the case of the finite, the relationship between the Trinity of Supremacy and the infinite upholder, the superadditive consequence of the relationship of those two, the Trinity of Supremacy and the infinite upholder, is what? Does anyone remember what we call that expression? It's the attitude towards the finite. So the word finite is going to be in that name. It's going to not be the infinite upholder. It's going to be the finite upholder. Okay. Literally, to begin to understand, one of the main ways of thinking about this deity that's coming from the action of the Trinity, is to call it the finite upholder, or relative to the absentite, to call it the absentite upholder. Okay? But it's a little bit more complicated than that, but that's a very much a beginning way to think about, because that's the cosmic over-control. Then it's just a question of whether or not it's the cosmos you're talking about is the finite cosmos or the absentite cosmos. But there's those other two facets, and that, mother deity is a little bit more complicated than that. But to begin to get a little bit of a sense and you can kind of see how it's, there's no indication from this that we're talking about some sort of a direct expression of the Trinity, like, an Ancient of Days. Is this literal, direct offspring just from the Trinity? This sort of vague, indirect referencing is there because it isn't just the Trinity in and of itself that's producing Mother Deity. It's the relationship between the Trinity and the infinite upholder, and some other deity too.
They try to give us some sense of this frame, but it seems like they're intentionally vague about the whole.
And that's true all through the book. One of the reasons is they're unsure about the nature of the ultimate. I was kind of alluding to that. On the one hand, you might say, well, I guess maybe the ultimate is just, a transcendent expression of the supreme. So I can just take what I know about the supreme and just take it up a notch as an analog. If I've got mother down here, I've got mother up there. If I've got the almighty down here, I've got the quote-unquote almighty up there, like the omnipotent. I put the two together, that must be the ultimate. Not quite. It's not that simple. And they know it's not that simple, but they don't actually know what that means. They just know it's not that simple. Because again, we're talking, you know, no matter how high these beings are that are talking to us here, they're finite beings. They might understand supremacy to a high degree, but absonity and ultimacy, no, that's mystery, just like it is to us in many ways. So, yeah. They're always very careful to admit that there's a limit to how much even they can say about this stuff. It doesn't, because they're talking to us, they just, you know, they don't understand it very well either.
Can they get a sense of the framework of absonity, even though they can't fill in the details? You know what I mean?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, like we can, even when we get to the first mansion world,
sure.
Supposedly.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, starting then, you know, as soon as you
maybe
have...
Even now, can we get a
sense? I mean, right now, right now you have your adjutant consciousness, and the thing that's you're gently touching upon above that is these three cosmic intuitions, this sort of lowest level of immediate consciousness transcendence, that intuition. You know, you get up higher, and that immediate thing that's transcending can start to have begin to bring in absonity, especially the higher up you get.
Okay. Okay. So we're in this life, we're pretty much restricted to a comprehension of supremacy.
In a direct way, you know, we can really get at affinity and then supremacy, but we can get at those things with objective clarity because we are given by grace a little bit of help from above. Just like me trying to get my agitated mind in order, I'm given a little bit of help in that from above. I don't have to try to just somehow do it within itself. I've got this little window of higher nature from above shining down into that to guide me of how to do it. And that's true all the way up. So obviously you start getting up very high, what's shining in from above is starting to have a lot of absonite, transcendent nature to it. But it's just an intuition. It's not something that you sort of have any sort of right in your face direct vision of, understanding of. It's just an inkling of transcendent coordination. Okay? All right, so let's see. Anything else there? No, okay. I think that's... But anyway, so... setting all of the experiential deity aside, you know, basically for the moment, just, you know, leave this so that definitely knowing how to talk about this functioning of the Trinity. Paradise Trinity functions as a Trinity of supremacy, the Trinity of ultimacy, and one other thing. What is it?
Three, the absolute attitude of the Paradise Trinity is in relation to absolute existences and culminates in the action of total deity.
Okay, so they've given you Trinity of supremacy, Trinity of ultimacy. What would be the term that expresses this level of the functioning of the Paradise Trinity? The Trinity of
absoluteness.
Trinity of absoluteness. Exactly. Right, we're up now. At that top level that we talked about this last week, the Trinity of Absoluteness. I mean, at the highest level, the Trinity of Absoluteness functions all the way around. And notice these three things were prefaced by such attitudes are simultaneous and may be multiple concerning any isolated situation or event. If all that's engageable in a particular level of functioning is the absolute, then you just have the Trinity of Absoluteness. But if there's deeper penetration possible, then that will be going on simultaneously. You'll have the Trinity of Absoluteness and the Trinity of Ultimacy, for instance. Or the Trinity of Absoluteness, the Trinity of Ultimacy, and the Trinity of Supremacy. Like for us. Okay? Because there's that full functioning in play, that has a potential to synchronize with our full personal nature. Because we have three dimensions of our personality are finite, three dimensions are absolute, one dimension is absolute. So if our personality begins to engage and initiate the growth of an experiential nature, in the full sense, that experiential nature that's going to result from that action of your personality is going to have seven dimensions to it. And those seven dimensions are in three levels. You can think of them as in three levels. Finite, absolute, and absolute. Well, this whole functioning of the Paradise Trinity that we say is the key to the origin of experiential deity, which is directly associated with our experiential nature that's growing here. See, the Trinity can engage all three levels of our potential. Yeah. If you're the third source and center, you don't need the Trinity of supremacy to engage you. You just need the Trinity of absoluteness to engage you. Okay, but we need all three. So, see, even though it's not immediately obvious, you know, such attitudes are simultaneous and maybe multiple concerning any isolated situation or event. What's an example of one such isolated situation or event? Me. I need, in the big picture, all three simultaneously. But, you know, it's like I did say, I mean, I bring up that first paragraph of this section all the time because it's that threefold functioning that's tied to the mother. Okay. All right, so Trinity of supremacy, Trinity of ultimacy, Trinity of absoluteness. You know, and here, let's just, you know, just one last little reminder from last week. You know, you can see those on the chart, the infinite eternal ellipse. You know, you know what these designations are talking about now. He's Trinity of supremacy, Trinity of ultimacy, Trinity of absoluteness. They're around that second from the outside circle. Functioning of the Trinity all the way around, you know, on all functional levels of total deity. You know, and you saw that, you know, culminates in the action of total deity. We were saying last time, it goes all the way around. Total deity here. Okay? So...
The Trinity Infinite involves the coordinate action of all triunity relationships of the first source and center, undeified as well as deified, and hence is very difficult for personalities to grasp. In the contemplation of the Trinity as infinite, do not ignore the seven triunities. Thereby, certain difficulties of understanding may be avoided, and certain paradoxes may be partially resolved.
Let's see, why don't we... I'll go ahead and read our last thing, too, here, and then I'll talk about it all together.
But I do not command language which would enable me to convey to the limited human mind the full truth and the eternal significance of the Paradise Trinity and the nature of the never-ending interassociation of the three beings of infinite perfection.
Okay. And I'm certainly not going to try to, you know, unpack this very much. Is this, you know, the moment you say Trinity Infinite, you're talking about very complicated things. But just let me just give you a little sense, a little reminder of why he brought this up. I mean, you know, here we're talking about the Paradise Trinity, and then all of a sudden he seems like out of the blue he brings up the Trinity Infinite. Why,
it's
you
almost
know.
A worship moment. Yeah. Hallelujah. The Trinity is a Trinity.
Why does he bring this up? Okay, from the individuality viewpoint, from the bottom-up point of view, when we start talking about experiential deity, you may remember there's this, you know, they bring it up in the foreword. You've got this initially kind of curious little aside to that whole story of mentioning God the Supreme, God the Ultimate, and God the Absolute. They tell you there's this thing called the Ultimate Trinity, and this thing called the Absolute Trinity. And you know, those two experiential trinities. And then there's this existential trinity, the Paradise Trinity. And you know, let's not go into the details of the Ultimate Trinity and the Absolute Trinity right now. That's not really relevant. But just just, you know, have the notion that we've got these other two trinities, these experiential trinities, and then this existential trinity. You're going, I've got three trinities. That kind of just is immediately begging for me to call the three of them that I lay out in front of me the Trinity of Trinities. Okay? From the bottom-up point of view, you know, you take everything all the way to the end. You bring God the Supreme into existence and God the Ultimate and take it all the way to, you know, the endless cycles of eternity and your in your imagination and you've even got God the Absolute. Now you bring it all to a culmination. You've got this full ultimate Trinity, this full absolute Trinity, and of course the always existent existential paradise Trinity. They got all three of them together, and they must have kind of a super additive consequence. Okay? And from the bottom up point of view, those three together, we could call that the Trinity of Trinities. Well, if you turn it around and look at it from the top down point of view, all those trinities have a designation from the top down point of view also. Bottom up, it's the ultimate Trinity. Top down, it's the Trinity ultimate. Bottom up, it's the absolute Trinity. Top down, it's the Trinity absolute. Bottom up, it's the Trinity of Trinities. Top down, it's the Trinity infinite. Okay, so he didn't bring up the Trinity of Trinities. He just plopped in the Trinity infinite. Okay. Remember, who's writing this paper? Universal Censor. Is he a bottom-up kind of guy? Yeah. Very top-down. Very top-down guy. Okay. Trinity Infinite. Okay. The top-down of all top-down things. Okay. The Trinity Infinite. Way up there at the very top. So tippy-top, actually, that you're actually fudging a little bit here. It's very direct that you can say ultimate Trinity, Trinity ultimate, absolute Trinity, Trinity absolute. But you're fudging a little bit, really, to say Trinity of Trinities, you know, and thinking of it kind of as a disc. And if I look at the bottom of the disc, I call it the Trinity of Trinities. And if I look at the top of the disc, I call it the Trinity infinite. For the other two, yeah. But this one, not actually. It actually has some thickness to it. The bottom of that range of reality, you can call it, when you look at it, you call that the Trinity of Trinities, and the top of that range of reality, you can call it the Trinity Infinite. But it's not like there's nothing in between. There's a whole complexity in between. That when you get up there in paper 106, Universe Levels of Reality, they allude to this thickness between those two notions. I shouldn't call them notions. Those two designations, as being that you span that range with a notion that they call the three-level concept. In other words, you know, it's not just one level. It's not just looking at two sides of one level. You know, they say you actually have an in-between. Okay, that in-between domain is related to experiential deity, which when in the bottom-up point of view, you know, we know when they start talking about experiential deity in the Supreme Papers, they try to help us to begin to understand that by bringing in the triunities and the trioddities. Begin to understand how there's this other thing going on. Notice what he mentions here. See, okay. See, that's what he's alluding to. He's alluding to that you know you can take if you take the Paradise Trinity, you know, up in this picture, you've got the Trinity of Trinities, where one of the three elements of that is the Paradise Trinity. Okay, that's why it's relevant here because we're talking about the Paradise Trinity. And if you go to the top-down point of view and you see the Trinity Infinite. But there's this little caveat that, you know, in some way, either, you know, like he's saying, don't forget about what results from the triunities and the triadities, or I can say, you know, because we've talked about this, don't forget about this whole aspect of the infinite upholder and its downstepped expression, giving rise to the unification of experiential deity, and that whole phenomenon, that whole intermediate phenomenon of experiential deity. Okay, God the Supreme, God the Ultimate, and God the Absolute. Okay, so that's what that's all about.
He has a qualifier in here.
Mm-hmm.
The coordinate action of all Trinity relationships of the first source and center.
No, of all triunity relationships. You know, undeified as well as deified.
Triunity is always involved the Father.
Right, the triunities are the threefold associations that involve the Father. You know, and sometimes you could have, like as the other two, could be the aisle and the unqualified absolute, neither of which you would call deity. You know, that's a pretty undeified thing to bring into association with the Father. Hence, you know, that's, you know, they mean all of them, you know. You know, plus there's more than seven, there's 15 of them, okay? Yeah, and you can bring in the whole ball of wax, all 15 triunities and all 20 triodities. I mean, all of that stuff that, you know, is kind of an other in the initial picture of the seven absolutes of infinity. None of those facts is one of the seven absolutes of infinity. They're a consequence of the seven absolutes of infinity. They're all the different combinations of three of those seven. Okay, and from an individuality viewpoint, like I said, what he's alluding to here, it's an thinking about all those triunities and trinities is a way of beginning to understand experiential deity. The problem is it's only half of the story. It's only the part, like when you're talking about the Supreme, that gives rise to the Almighty. You know, it's the action of the Supreme Creator personalities in association with, from this point of view, in association with the Deity Absolute, the Universal Absolute, the Unqualified Absolute, the actualization of those potentials, you know, giving rise to this upwelling phenomenon out of those reservoirs that is the Almighty, the embodiment of the Supreme Being. You know, like I said, I mean, that whole discussion. But, you know, that's only half of the story, actually. There's also the stuff that's coming down from the Trinity. Contemplating the Trinities and Trinities is not going to give you everything that you need to know to understand that three-level concept that spans this gap between the Trinity of Trinities and the Trinity Infinite. But it gets you started, and it's what they've been told to give us as, you know, an initial suggestion. Start with your individuality viewpoint. Push that as far as you can. Yeah, and hopefully at some point you'll notice all of the suggestions we have in the book to start bringing in the top-down point of view.
And it says, certain paradoxes may be partially resolved.
See, partially resolved. See, that's what I'm saying.
See, and I don't even see triodities mentioned. It's just triunities.
Well, he's just being very, you know, touching here. I mean, you could say the very fact that he says triunity relationships, he does say of the first source and center, but you know, you can use the word triunity in a generalized sense too, to include both the triunities and the triodities. I mean, anyway, it's not important to really understand any of that detail right now. That's not the point. But see, what I'm just saying, you know, you noticed he's very careful in how he words it. He puts in words like partial. Like I said, it's only going to get you a beginning on half of the story. That's the partialness of it.
He's just going off the master spirit for his mind, right? The seventh master spirit?
If you go up and read about... No, it's much more mysterious than that. Go up and read about the universal censors. That's written... You know, when they're talking about that, that's written by a divine counselor. You'd think... would very much understand universal censors. He's one of those, you know, the perfectors of wisdom, divine counselors, and universal censors. He's one of those three Trinity origin beings. You'd think he'd, you know, really understand universal censors. He says, well, not really. There's a bunch of things that are above my pay grade about my brother, the universal censor. It's inscrutable to me. He's got some access to some top-down stuff that's way above my level of comprehension. He thinks, and from my viewpoint, he thinks in a, at a super additive level that transcends my comprehension.
Yeah, I guess
he's very top down.
I forgot about the universal.
Maybe he is speaking some truth. In 1,000 years from now, there might be some mortals that could
theoretically.
If you work through total deity with me, I'll explain a whole bunch of this stuff in great detail that'll make your ears hurt, okay? We can say a lot about this stuff, but not sitting in, right, you know, 2 minutes in this class. This is very, very, very complicated stuff,
right,
okay?
I just wanted to make the observation that in indicting the book and in giving us this revelation, they must have had a bit of an understanding of how humans like to look for secret codes in texts. They, I guess, must have been confident that at some point Chris Halverson would appear.
I hope someone greater than me appears someday. And the key, of course, here is to not think of it, you know, in direct secret message mode, of course. It's not the Da Vinci code that we're to divine. What you're supposed to do is take the light in cultivating an objective consciousness that can latch on to the initial recognition and then also have cultivated a very rigorous, methodical, deductive reasoning ability that can take that initial starting point and very properly, precisely step forward from it and unpack this. If you don't have both, you know, it's not going to work. You've got to be able to, you can't truly interpret if you can't first truly recognize. So you discover, recognize, interpret, okay? And you're going to develop this whole new recognition of reality and its whole new understanding of who you are and how you are a part of that reality that's going to totally transform your choices. Discover, recognize, interpret, and then italics, choose. You know? Remember? Okay. So, we're unpacking, but not in a mystical way. You know, in a logical way. All right, so you know, we kind of filled in a whole bunch of in between the lines there and saw how much the mother was coming into play in that section, you know, the three of the four things. Now let's just very directly talk about the first of those four things, justice administration. There's these beings, Trinity origin beings, that are the embodiment, you know, in little packages, the embodiment of that justice that is the Trinity.
The stationary sons of the Trinity. All law takes origin in the first source and center. He is law. The administration of spiritual law inheres in the second source and center. The revelation of law, the promulgation and interpretation of the divine statutes is the function of the third source and center. The application of law, justice, falls within the province of the Paradise Trinity and is carried out by certain sons of the Trinity.
Okay. Now, remember a while back, we were talking about the Son. And, you know, we kind of very definitively took a first step away from God the Father is love. We took that next step. The Son is mercy. And we had a nice little succinct way of beginning to think about the fact of mercy. Mercy is to applied love. Okay? The other side of the coin of mercy is justice. If it literally is a parallel expression, I should have a very parallel way of saying that. Justice is applied law. Mercy is applied love, justice is applied law. From the, you know, in the nature of the Father, they're the same thing. It's just two sides of the same fact.
Law and love are the same.
Like, yeah. I mean, like thought adjusters, or father fragments, and the four shards of space are the same thing. Just like that. Okay? Now, obviously, in our experience, there's a lot of differential between the two. But at the highest level, they're coming from the same point. Okay? And let's think a little bit more precisely about that. Okay? Notice all law takes origin. Does it say in the Father, in the universal Father? No, he very purposely said the first source and center. Okay? Remember, we couldn't help but have to talk a little bit about that little detail, like the first source and the first center. We brought in the universal one of infinity because we were trying to understand and one as two and acting for two. Remember last week when we were trying to sort that out? Okay, that he's applying that now. That one as two and acting for two. Okay, I mean, very. Most immediately, when you say the first source and center, first source and center, he is the law. Most directly, the first center is the law. How do you think about that? Remember, here recently we were beginning to try to have a nice initial way to understand the notion of an absolute. You say. The absolute of matter, or the absolute spirit, or the absolute mind, that's that center point, that anchor point. The absolute spirit is the law about which all spirit reality is oriented. It's the center of that whole domain of spirit energy. It is the law of that energy. Okay? It's the center of it. Everything is oriented about that absolute nuclear fact. Okay, when you talk about the Father, in the context of the seven absolutes infinity, they say, well, one way you can kind of think about him, he's the absolute of absolutes. He's the center of centers. He's the first center. Okay, so you have the universal one of infinity. One side is the first center. The other side is the Paradise Trinity. And when we were talking about the Paradise Trinity, we were focused on it and say we have the one acting for the two. Okay, if you think about that first center, literally that point, you often visualize that as. Is that center point, that center of centers, is the law. Everything is oriented about the center of centers, the law of all things. Okay, that first center is the law, very directly. And the Paradise Trinity is acting for both for itself and for the first center. Okay, so if you're going to act for the law, what would you call that? Applied law. You'd probably call that justice. Okay? So just think, see, the one is two and acting for two. Acting for two. Acting for the first center, and when it does, you have applied law. That's the Justice Administration. That's one of the four things. When it's not acting for the first center, when it's acting for itself, you've got the other three. And that gives rise to the Mother.
That's the Trinity acting
for itself. Right, that's the Trinity acting for itself. But it also acts for the first center. Okay? That's why there's those two parts. Okay, Justice Administration, and then the whole womb, vocalizer, upholder part of the picture.
That leaves the Father free just to show the face of love to the universe.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Trinity has his back.
Yeah, right. Trinity has his back on the facts. Yeah. You know when you're thinking about the circuit of the Father here, this second circuit in from the center on the chart of the ellipse. See, here's the first source, here's the first center. You know, together, that's the first source and center. Those two facets of functioning. Okay? If you think about the first source and center oriented this way, you know, towards the universal Father and its engagement of the Son and the Spirit. Okay, I mean, see, that's that love expression that we talk so much about. Love leading to mercy and ministry. Okay, yeah. But the first source and center has another side going the other way, and that's what we're talking about here. You know, now we're talking about, you know, when you go that other direction from the first center, you immediately hit the Paradise Trinity. And out from the Paradise Trinity is going to come an expression. Justice. Love comes out the other side. Justice comes, you know, here. Okay, so that's what they're getting at there. Just as, you know, we were alluding to, you know, the Trinity gives rise to this actual purpose, personal purposive phenomenon that engages the universe, the individualities of the whole at all levels, the Mother. It's not doing that directly. Same thing here. I mean, the Trinity doesn't directly do the justice thing. It's immediately delegated to hands, into hands. Stationary sons of the Trinity, okay? You know, little nuggets of functioning called the stationary sons of the Trinity. When you see them functioning, you're seeing the Trinity functioning, personalized.
Manipulating.
Okay? Yeah. They're little nuggets of the Trinity personalized. The Trinity itself is not a person. If you make these little nuggets of the Trinity, they can be personalized, and then you're seeing that will of the impersonal Trinity, acting as volitional beings. Okay, and so here we are. Applied law, justice is applied law. Yeah, go ahead.
Justice is inherent in the universal sovereignty of the Paradise Trinity, but goodness, mercy, and truth are the universe ministry of the divine personalities, whose deity union constitutes the Trinity. Justice is not the attitude of the Father, the Son, or the Spirit. Justice is the Trinity attitude of these personalities of love, mercy, and ministry. No one of the Paradise deities fosters the administration of justice. Justice is never a personal attitude. It is always a plural function.
Does those first two paragraphs, the pattern of them, remind you of the first two paragraphs of the previous section? Look what he did. He just repeated it. He said, okay, I'm going to give him the first paragraph, you know, that's really me, you know, really, really where I'm coming from. This paragraph that if you're really going to unpack and talk about for more than 2 seconds, you've got to bring in the top-down point of view. I mean, like here, you've got to talk about the universal one of infinity. You've got to understand all of this bigger stuff. Just like the first paragraph in the last section. But then it's immediately followed by a paragraph that's like, okay, from the bottom-up point of view, from the individuality viewpoint, you've got the three persons, and you're thinking of the Trinity as a super additive consequence. And, you know, see, so he just, it's the same thing. You know, and he's reminding you, but goodness, mercy, and truth are the universe ministry of the divine personalities. Justice is a Trinity attitude of these personalities of love, mercy, and ministry, you know, and no one of the Paradise deities, you know, fosters the administration of justice. You know, it's that basic super additive thing. You've got these three beings, you know, you can't point to the Father and say justice, you can't point to the Son and say justice, you can't point to the Spirit and say justice, but from the bottom-up point of view, you put the three together in a super additive consequence and you have justice. Just like you take hydrogen and oxygen, you take something that burns, something, you know, and something that, you know, is the means by which everything burns, oxygen. You put the two together, and you get something that puts out fires. Okay? You know, there's no additive way to understand how I can take love, mercy, and ministry and put them together and get justice. Any more than I can understand how I can take a burning thing and the promoter of burning and get something that douses burning. Okay. So he's just reminding you of the super additive picture. And notice that, you see, this is the inadequacy of the bottom up viewpoint, is what this really brings out. I mean, okay, I can just say that. It's like, wow, that's really mysterious, that super additive thing. It's like, who could ever guess that you could take love, mercy, and ministry, you could get goodness, you know, mercy and truth, and somehow put them together and get justice. Wow, isn't, you know, this mysterious? Yeah, the bottom-up point of view is just pretty inscrutable. You turn it around to the top-down point of view, and we just talked about it very simply and directly. The justice is not a mystery. It's exactly what you get deductively from the top-down point of view. It's just right there. The center of centers, what would I call that? I'd call that the law. And what would I call the application of that? I would call that justice. Okay, boop, there it is. Okay. There's no mystery in the top-down point of view. It's just a direct understanding of why the Trinity embodies justice. Because, like they said, it's the one as two and acting for two. And then you just have to figure out what the two are and all that stuff. You have to figure out total deity. All right.
Evidence. The basis of fairness, justice in harmony with mercy, is supplied by the personalities of the third source and center, the conjoint representative of the Father and the Son to all realms and to the minds of the intelligent beings of all creation. Judgment, the final application of justice in accordance with the evidence submitted by the personalities of the Infinite Spirit, is the work of the stationary sons of the Trinity, beings partaking of the Trinity nature of the united Father, Son, and Spirit.
Okay, so, you know, they're unpacking that. You know, in many ways, it's a bit abstract, the word justice. You know, so they're unpacking that a little bit. You know, okay, so, you know, what exactly is justice? Well, you can think of it as you know, a twofold process. Evidence leading to judgment. And this whole judgment thing, who are the final judges, you know, of mortal survival or any being's survival?
Order of days.
The Ancients of Days. One of, yeah, see it's in the list coming up, okay? One of these stationary sons of the Trinity. Or, oh, here, you know, I should have just had it marked. Let's see, if I go up to Universal Censors, they are, these unique beings are, italicized, these unique beings are the judgment of deity. They are not merely reflective of the decisions of perfections. They are the judgment of the Paradise Trinity. Okay, this is what I was saying. I mean, they are the Paradise Trinity. They're the direct offspring of the Paradise Trinity, personalized. You know, they're not reflective of the Trinity. They are the Trinity, the volitional mandates of the Trinity. They are the volitional mandates of the Trinity. Okay? You've been judged.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I said, the all-seeing eye that penetrates the core of all things, the universal censor, he tallies your heart, okay? Takes a census, okay? Sums up, you know, yeah.
So in other words, this level of judgment at the highest levels of universe administration is reserved to beings that represent the Trinity directness.
What's the key ingredient that we can attempt to reflect about this pattern on high? I'm not a Trinity origin being. So I don't have that. It's like, well, okay, so what? How could we try to simulate that in a sense? Well, the Trinity is impersonal. You know, in order to try to move towards something that's like this, you need to somehow mitigate against one little personality point like Chris Halvorsen trying to be the judge. You need a group. You need to distribute it, this judgment amongst the group as much as possible. Like I said, it is always a plural function. I mean, you know, they actually do that on high too. But but that's why you want it to be as much of a group phenomenon, as impersonal as possible. But of course, there's also has to be a personal element, because there has to be actual, decisions, choices, you know, volitional, you know, nature to it. You know, and that's why there are these stationary sons of the Trinity as persons. It isn't just this amorphous force, you know, that judges you in the universe. Okay.
They're co-creating okay. When they're making decisions. Yeah.
But that's about, and you know, like we always point out, Lady Justice has a blindfold for this reason. You know, Lady Justice in ancient times didn't have a blindfold. As soon as mankind got a little higher consciousness and began to intuitively know what we're reading about right here, began to intuitively know that the source of justice is impersonal. It's not the universal Father. The source of justice is the Paradise Trinity. We began to recognize that intuitively, and we changed the statues of Lady Justice, and we put a blindfold on her to represent this recognition, you know, of what we're reading about here.
If you are to be judged, it's by a jury of your peers, presumably who would have some inkling of or understanding of the experience that mm-hmm. led to your mm-hmm. crime.
And that's, of course, all over in the on high pattern, too.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So who of these judges has experience?
Well, I mean, they're not going to get into all the details here, but when you start reading about all the details of the judicial process on high, all this stuff about evidence and all this, I mean, there's all of these beings, high and low, that come in, you know, beings that are your peers and all this. I mean, you know, it's not just, you know, one being, you know, it's not just the Ancient of Days standing there with his all-seeing eye next to him, you know, doing this or this, you know. It's this very complex hierarchy of experiential beings who speak to every level and every angle, and yeah. So it's as peered as possible, if you will, if I can say it that way, but as definitively hierarchical as it must be as well. It's not just some fuzzy thing all in the supposed plane of reality, you know, like Lucifer imagined. There is a definitive hierarchy. There's a definitive top-down flow in this justice system, but there's also a bottom-up flow. And a little bit of that is just right here. The evidence flows up from the bottom, and the judgment flows down from the top. Yep.
You know, I don't think they really have to rely on so much experience and evidence, because they judge you by your intentions. So if the universal sensor knows what was truly in your heart, then you're not really judged based on your actions.
Read the details. You know, justice on high is a lot more complicated than that.
Yeah. But aren't we
judging? It isn't all just judging whether you go to, you know, you're going to make it to eternity or not. I mean, you know, there's all kinds of minutiae that have to be dealt with on high. You know, it's not, you know, it's just like here. Well, you know, his dog peed in my yard, and I don't like dogs peeing in my yard, and I'm going to take him to court, and, you know, and okay, this sort of stuff happens on high, too. All kinds of minutiae, you know. You got two groups of being, and these guys say, well, I think we should do it this way, and these guys say, no, I think we should do it this way, and they're arguing, and okay, this happens on high, too. Someone's got to step in. It's like, okay. Let me see the evidence. Give me all the objective details. What's really going on here? Present your evidence. Make your case, you know. And then I'll enter in. I'll sum that all up. I'll weigh it all, and I'll give you a judgment. again, when we think about, see, this is, when you start to really think about the justice system on high, you'll start to, it'll start to really sink home that, wait a minute, the whole universe doesn't seem to revolve around me. A lot of what they're talking about here has nothing to do with me at all. It's these celestials and all of their issues. Yeah. I mean, just one little element of it is, personality extinction, quote unquote. The majority of it is all of the endless details of administration and executive function and all this sort of stuff.
So, like you said, justice is not without mercy unless there is no more mercy.
And of course, I didn't say that. We just read that. Yeah. Evidence, the basis of fairness, and then there's a parenthetical. Justice in harmony with mercy. Okay, a definition of objective fairness. Justice in harmony with mercy. And harmony is no small task, remember. That's a full personal word. That means there's threefold actuality brought together into a functional triunity that is harmony. Okay, you have this, the basic source in this domain of why you need, like you're saying, this bidirectional flow, all this sort of complementary character, justice on the one side, mercy on the other side, is so that you have this total fairness. And a lot of what's going on in these things is someone might question whether or not full mercy has been doled out. I mean, it's not like these people don't go, wait a minute, I don't agree with that. I don't think, And so you've got to address that concern on some celestial's part. How do they do that? They bring in the evidence. If it takes, a million years and a billion beings, they collect all the evidence and exhaustively present it so that there's no question. Every I has been dotted, every T has been crossed, total, nothing missed, mercy has been applied. I mean, this has to be proved.
Jesus said, don't be willing to not go to law against your fellow. So why don't they apply that up there?
Because you got two beings that disagree. There's no way for them to. A decision has to be made. So you've got to go up the chain. Someone's has to be brought in that can break the dichotomy of viewpoint. Someone's got to make a judgment on what the appropriate thing to do is. It happens all the time. I mean, they're not going to law in the sense we think of it.
It's just mediation.
Again, it's kind of like what John was just alluding to. I mean, we need to continue to work on maturing, uplifting our notion of justice. And certainly, the mode that it's devolved into now, where it's all the way down to the first level of meaning, and it's not any sort of objective justice at all anymore. It's that level of, so when you're going up the levels of meaning, purely bottom up, and you haven't made it to level two yet, you're just on level one, and it's that purely selfish level. It's all about you, and I demand justice. I demand that someone make someone pay. I want the universe to revolve around me. And I'm going to manipulate this justice system that you've created so that I can get the universe to revolve around me. I shouldn't have to work. I shouldn't have to do anything. I should be able to manipulate this system and get everything I want. I mean, it's just this purely first level of meaning notion that we have of justice. Like I tried to point out, when they say first just, next fair, okay. I mean, when you're thinking about yourself as an individual moving up those levels of meaning, what does just mean there? Does it mean that the legal system gives you everything that you want Is that what that means? No, it means honest and law-abiding. Okay? Not law-questioning, not law-manipulating, not... Okay, law-abiding. First be law-abiding. And then if you get way up high, maybe you'll have enough objectivity that you could suggest better law. But the first thing you need to do is just be law-abiding. What did when everyone was trying to get Jesus to be the agent of change, you know, in terms of law and stuff, and what did he say to them? He said, no, first be law-abiding. He says, well, but they're horrible. Look at these, you know, look at these leaders. Look at these priests. They're just totally corrupt. And he says, you have no idea, you know, and he goes into the woes. You know, and rattles off the million ways that they're just horrendously corrupt. And then he says, but obey them. Okay, how many people with their spiritual consciousness come to that conclusion? When all is said and done about how bad everything is, do they say, but I must first be just, then fair, then patient? No, immediately you want to be an anarchist and tear down the system and say, yeah, it's the Lucifer Rebellion. You're falling right into the Lucifer Rebellion. If you aren't first just, then fair. All right. So here they who are they?
This group of Trinity sons embraces the following personalities. One, Trinitized secrets of supremacy. Two, eternals of days. Three, ancients of days. Four, perfections of days. Five, recents of days. Six, unions of days. Seven, faithfuls of days. Eight, perfectors of wisdom. Nine, divine counselors. And 10, universal censors. We are the children of the three paradise deities functioning as the Trinity, for I chance to belong to the 10th order of this group, the universal censors. These orders are not representative of the attitude of the Trinity in a universal sense. They represent this collective attitude of deity only in the domains of executive judgment, justice. They were specifically designed by the Trinity for the precise work to which they are assigned, and they represent the Trinity only in those functions for which they were personalized.
Okay, so are they an expression of totality attitude? No. Are they expression of coordinate action? No. Are they an expression of cosmic overcontrol? No. That's the mother. They're an expression of justice administration solely. Just like it says there. They are just that direct expression of applied law. And see, just like I said, I mean, they're designed by that impersonal fact. The Trinity, expressed, and then personalized.
Chris, now this is basically the administrative branch. Now, are they considered creatures or creators?
They're all creatures, except for the Ancients of Days are God. That's personalized deity. There, that's God, Ancients of Days. But the Eternals of Days are not God. Trinitized secrets of supremacy are not God. They're very high divine beings. A universal censor is not God, not a creator, just a creature. But a very top-down point of view creature who penetrates through all fogs and tallies the truth.
The Ancients of Days and their Trinity origin associates mete out the just judgment of supreme fairness to the seven super-universes. In the central universe, such functions exist in theory only. There, fairness is self-evident in perfection, and Havona perfection precludes all possibility of disharmony. Justice is the collective thought of righteousness. Mercy is its personal expression. Mercy is the attitude of love. Precision characterizes the operation of law. Divine judgment is the soul of fairness ever conforming to the justice of the Trinity, ever fulfilling the divine love of God. When fully perceived and completely understood, the righteous justice of the Trinity and the merciful love of the Universal Father are coincident. But man has no such full understanding of divine justice. Thus, in the Trinity, as man would view it, the personalities of Father, Son, and Spirit are adjusted to coordinate ministry of love and law in the experiential universes of time.
Okay. The righteous justice of the Trinity and the merciful love of the Universal Father are coincident. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. You start at the root of the Father and you go one direction and you've got love. You go the other direction and you've got justice from the law. Just one other thing for, you know, advanced thinking to notice in here. How marvelously the picture works together when you start to see it. Just bring up one little detail here. So if when you're thinking about the first functional level of total deity, you know, on the ellipse, this wedge that's at the top. You know, like when you look in the beginning of the foreword, and they lay out the functional levels. There's two facets of deity functioning on that first level that they have in that list: the infinite and the universal one of infinity, self-existent deity and self-contained deity. And one of the things as you're beginning to think about that static level, the stasis of deity, and what comes from that anchor in all of this functioning, you know, that you have those two facets there, they provide a starting point, an origin for the two viewpoints, the unity viewpoint and the individuality viewpoint. And you can just visualize that in a very simple picture. So the one facet of deity, the infinite, picture that as one infinite point. The origin of the unity point of view. Unity point of view. One infinite point. Picture the contrasting facet of deity on that level, the universal one of infinity, as a as an infinite collection of points. You know, so just imagine, you know, making a whole bunch of dots on a piece of paper until you fill out an infinite sheet of paper with dots. There's no spaces left. Okay? It's not one infinite point. It's an infinite...
An infinity.
Yeah. Okay? All right? That's a way of thinking about the fact of the Paradise Trinity. You know, what's kind of inherent in its nature. And so when you think about if it's going to be this source of justice, of applied law, is it going to just ball it all together? The details aren't important. You know, it's just one infinite point. No. How is it going to see it? It's going to see it in a way that could be described as precision characterizes the operation of precision characterizes the operation of law. Okay. It's just right there to be recognized. See, once you deduce that, it's like, oh yeah, I could have written that sentence. I understand that. You know, it's not going to be just fuzz it all together. It's not going to be like your spiritual consciousness. Well, the details aren't important. Everyone, you know, we're all just one big happy family. Can't we just, you know? Hey, you know, it's not going to be like that. No, it's going to notice every single little detail. And everything is going to be taken into account. Okay? It's an infinite collection of points. There's no place that anything can be that there isn't a point there that recognizes it, takes it into account. Okay? Precision characterizes the operation of law because it comes from this infinite set of points, fact that is the Paradise Trinity.
High resolution justice.
Very high resolution justice. Yeah. Infinite resolution.
Yeah.
All right. That's the kind of fun things that you can start to notice. I don't just have to sort of just accept that. I can actually understand that directly, why that's, I could deduce that. Okay. And that's like we were saying, from the bottom up point of view, justice coming from goodness, mercy, and truth, that's pretty mysterious. Where does that come from? But from the top-down point of view, it's just right there. The precision is just right there. The fact of the applied law is just right there. It's just it's the very first thing you deduce. It's not some, infinite level of deduction where you finally somehow figure out how to calculate that super additivity in some, utterly transcendent Marantia mathematics or something. It's just a simple, straightforward deductive fact in the top-down point of view. That's the power of beginning to see it both ways. We've used that with the mystery of mysteries. A lot of that mystery of mysteries that's a bottom-up point of view. You bring in the top-down point of view, and it's a little less mysterious. It's still plenty mysterious. But at least it isn't just totally whatever. You can get some handle on it. Okay? All right. That's what we're working on here. Is beginning to unpack your unity viewpoint, in the revelation, so you can start to get more out of this. And it doesn't just all kind of I don't see any way I can understand this. So I don't see any way I can really apply this to my life. It's just word after word after word and sentence after sentence and paper after paper of stuff that you can actually start to get a hold of it. It starts to come alive. You begin to say, whoa, this is actually really relevant. Now that I understand how it works, that actually, I've experienced that downstepped expression of that in my life. That really changes the way I choose.
What you just said, it sounded like you were giving up. That was the third step of the Lucifer.
right. I mean, see, that's...
forewarn all believers.
A lot of... He forgot that he was born with a limited viewpoint, and he got frustrated. Remember how his impatience, was part of the initial problem, and so he just said, forget about it, and we're just going to turn it right angles, but of course, he's encircled in the Holy Spirit too, and there came a point when. When he finally tried to really run with his other alternative viewpoint of reality, he came up against the facts. It's like, wait a minute. Now I see, that's not right, is it? Okay.
That's not going to be about right.
But, I don't have the courage to admit the fact that I went public and I'm an idiot. So now I'm going to start choosing what I know to be wrong. I'm going to go from evil to sin.
Iniquity.
Yeah, and eventually to iniquity. Yeah.
They're talking about law. It's almost, I have a sense that they're talking about a single law as a single thing.
Yes and no. I mean, here, yeah, very much. The center of centers, it's a very singular sort of a notion. But the legislature in Norlaishadeck passes a bunch of laws. And the executive branch down at the system level has got to try to put those into practice. And two beings are assigned to a task force to apply a certain thing, and one says, well, I think this is the way to do it. And the other says, no, I think this is the way to do it. And they can't come to an agreement. Someone's got,
So they have a Supreme Court.
Yeah, so they have a whole hierarchy of courts, and it finally has
courts.
Yeah, traveling courts, you know, with the executioners. And or what if, you know, what if the angels of progress and the angels of churches have issues, which they always do? How does this get resolved? It's just endless minutia. And sometimes there's beings that cut through all this, you know. If a Verondadex son has assumed a regency, okay, all this appeals, that's all goes out the window. He speaks with absolute authority. He cuts through all the crap.
responsibility for keeping us.
He's the Most High Father in that mode. His word is final. It's as if the Universal Father is personally present and is speaking, and who do you appeal to above him? So sometimes you have to expedite things. You can't have an endless appeal process and, you know, well, it's going to take a million years to gather that evidence. Yeah, I mean, you can't have all that, Paul. There has to be someone who just cuts through it all. All right. Yeah. And if you're uncertain that he's got that authority, three personalized adjusters appear at his side just to remind you that he speaks directly for the Father. And whatever he says is absolute law. Period.
Have a seat. First, on a good note, if you hold on to mercy, then your guardian will present you blameless in the trials of justice.
Right. But that mercy might come after the Most High has to do some ruling in the kingdoms of men, and you're caught in the crossfire. Again, this whole bit about fairness, justice, and harmony of mercy, I mean, that is not necessarily, you know, in the moment. This spread out over time. You know, the Lucifer Rebellion and its adjudication is a great example of this. Was that fairness just all just bottled up in one moment? No, it's spread out over 200,000 years already here. When all is said and done, that harmony will be there. That balance will be there. That balance and proportion will be there. So next time, we'll wrap up the five papers on existential deity. And we'll be ready to voyage on to the next group of five papers.
This is the first exposition of individual beings that aren't, well, except for the ancient days, that aren't deity. Is it not? I mean, we've got this list of 10.
You can tell we're going to start to get into the mode where we got endless lists of beings. Not just the three personal deities. All right, so let's take a moment here.